So this is five of us and a remote. This is kind of fun.
Uncharted territory.
Fun? I think this is great.
I don't know.
We look like one of those news teams getting election results or something. Like, what are you seeing down in the precinct there, Steve?
we need holographic Irk now to be all set.
He would look like a Max Headroom, though. Like a robotic Irk.
Do you know, are you guys familiar with the history of Max Headroom? Like, before we get into the real podcast? Do you know that's a Chicago thing? It's actually very interesting.
Is it really?
No,
I'm
aware.
So before Pepsi appropriated it, it was these like cultural critics and artists who hacked in to a network TV signal and broadcasted Max Headroom. And he was like, he did that. I've taken over the airwaves. I have your signal.
Yeah.
It was WGN. Like,
it was at WGN? Okay. Yep. And then, so it was like Chicago only, and then like an advertiser saw it and found the guys who did it and bought it for Pepsi. But it, which is sort of funny that it was meant to be a cultural movement and then Pepsi buys it.
Anti-culture.
He's selling cola in 2 weeks, you know? But yeah, it all started in Chicago, and I remember that being huge growing up in Cleveland.
Don't say it was. Was it?
Well, he had his own network TV show as well. There was a Max Headroom show. But yeah.
There was. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, there was.
I remember that.
I think he did MTV ads too.
Oh, yeah. He was like, all over it.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
And so I guess what they did is they climbed up to the towers. I'm not sure if they were physically how close they were, but you just have to overpower the antenna enough to make it more powerful than whatever the previous stream was. And so they interrupted the live news, and the newscaster was like, he was so befuddled. He's like, I have no idea what that is. And then 2 hours later, they had like an uninterrupted minute and a half of streaming.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Mm. Wow. I had no idea. That's very cool.
I wonder if you could still do that. Like, I wonder if it's, like, more secure now, if it's, like, encrypted or something, or I don't know.
Over-the-air stuff?
I'll bet you it's not. I'll bet you could still do it. It might be, the physical facilities might be better secured, but I'll bet you, like, you could still do it with the same tech. Like, if you put a drone up there that carried your equipment up.
That'd be awesome. So how about, you just hire that Spider-Man dude who
That's how we
buildings.
Promote this podcast. Let's break into WGN.
My college radio station literally broadcast in 10 watts. It was the weakest broadcast signal ever. And the reason was they had a great frequency. They were like, it was like 96.9 or something.
Oh, wow.
It was right in the middle of the dial. And, you know, it was unheard of that we had this, but we couldn't get a better transmitter because we would bleed into all of the stations close to us. You know, St. Louis was very close to us. And as soon as we did that, we would like knock out two stations. So, so you can literally only get our radio station right around our campus.
You knock out every Cardinal game east of the Mississippi.
Nah, who would have cared? Well, I suppose we should probably officially kick off. Good starting there. Welcome to the Worldwide IT Guys podcast. I am Steve.
John.
Sorry. Sean. And John.
Yep. Dion.
And Gavin.
Excellent. We got a five-person podcast. First time we've done one of these, I think, since the sort of public official role of this. We are the Worldwide IT Guys, and this is podcast number 12.
Wow.
Big stuff.
It only took Worldwide IT 12 podcasts to figure out how to patch in somebody remotely. So, you know, let's...
Yeah, let's not talk too much about...
We'll pat ourselves on the back later. Let's make sure this gets out.
I wanted to start this week by just talking a little bit about, you know, last week. Last week was a bit of a therapy session, for at least Dion, maybe. While I'm sure it was extremely valuable, I'm not sure it was the best podcast material in the world. So, Dion, can you confirm, was this helpful for you?
Yeah, I didn't have to see a therapist. My child was happy. My wife was happy. It was a good Thursday night. Yeah, thanks.
Cool. Well, you're feeling better, so we're gonna move on. We're not gonna.
Wait. I want to know what I missed. I guess
it was essentially the transformation. You should have listened to it, but the transformation, the pains of transformation, and the quote of the week was While Sean was on vacation, it seemed like a different person was shitting in my face every week. So.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Variety is a
spice of
life.
Yeah.
Hey.
Anyways.
But hey, now we're like a week in on the pilot. All's good, right?
Yeah, week in on the pilot of our end users being confused, not knowing where to go, so they just don't open tickets. So I guess that's a win.
We grew to like the taste of shit, is what happened. It's an acquired taste.
We have the lowest amount of tickets opened ever for any help desk at JWT.
Sounds
so
to me like
this is great. It's perfect. It's perfect.
It's like the oil light keeps on flashing. Just pull the fuse.
Yep, you pull the fuse.
It's not flashing anymore. Car drives fine.
You know what I've always wondered, like what would be like a funny, if you could get the data from like Comcast or some place like that, is I'd love to hear just a recording of what people scream at the automated system when they just want to get a human. Like, there's got to be like a bunch of hilarious examples of like, fucking human! Because you know, like, they'll usually give you this safe word that'll supposedly get you a person or something, yes, or associate or something like that. Like,
operator.
Yeah. Because it never like really hears you right or, you know.
Yes.
But I wonder if that's what our users are doing.
I don't think ours, I haven't called per se. I have opened an online session to get a ticket going. So I had an interaction with the computer, you know, person at the other end of the keyboard thing. And that was, it was very pleasant. Person was very engaged and talked to us and just wanted to help. And that was very valuable until he realized he couldn't help me with what I was asking.
Did you hear the story? There's a senior business partner who did call the help desk who spent 10 minutes waiting for the tech on the L1 initial support queue to figure out what her name was, how to spell it, how to find her in the system. And at one point, she basically said, "Do you want to ask me what my problem is now?" And she was like, "I'm still waiting.
Ma'am, it's the furthest thing from my mind."
I can't even find in the directory.
I thought we'd get to know each other, you know, sort of.
At this point, you don't exist. I'm trying to prove your existence in the world. Once you exist in my world, then maybe I can help you. I mean, that's essentially what happened to her. And it was a very senior person in our organization who basically, and when I went in to look at the ticket, it was regarding a printer, something very simple. This was low-hanging fruit for IBM to knock out and deliver on. And they spent almost 10 minutes trying to find her in the system. And I guarantee it was based on the spelling of her name. So.
And to be fair, I had not the same experience, but I had a similar interaction with the person just trying to ask me, you know, how are you today? You know, where are you in the world? What's the weather? I mean, he was asking all these questions that were totally unrelated. Look, I have a problem. I want to solve my problem, was my mindset going in. And it was a bit, not scripted, but planned for me to do this. And yet I, you know, was being asked where I was in the world and what the weather was like. It's like, no, I want to solve a problem. I don't want to make a friend here. This is not my goal. I just want to get my problem solved. So I can understand why she might have gotten a little bit caught up. But interestingly, another person of Indian descent said that when they called, because they landed on the Indian help desk, it was the first time in their experience at our organization where they didn't have to spell their name, where they could just, they said their name and they were like, oh, great, gotcha, let's move on. So there's that plus.
I'm not sure that's really a plus.
Yeah, I guess it is, yeah. I mean, it could be a plus, right? That now it's all internationalized and everything. Not calling all us hillbillies up here in the U.S. to answer all your questions.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the help desk times vary, and the service hours are different, and the languages supported are only in an 8-hour you know, window of your region. So, you know, I think if you don't call within the 8-hour window of your time zone and you look for support and you're not speaking English, it'll be a different experience.
Yeah, but that doesn't represent a step backwards from what we had, though, right? Like, that's in terms of languages offered, I think we're actually better, right?
In an 8-hour window, I think we're probably better.
Yeah.
But in the initial go here, I think the time zones will be interesting to see. Just basically which desk is helping and which time zones with which languages.
We were laughing, Steve, this morning because we were getting – the last week we've gotten some hilarious refusals to admit that there are problems that need to be solved. It seems like because everyone's role is kind of ambiguous, it's very easy to just deny that they need to help on something. But anyways, like, we couldn't reach pretty much any of our network endpoints to do our job today, and somebody was saying that he was talking to the support team that needed to solve it, and the guy goes, "Oh, no, it's not a problem. I can ping it." It's like, you have 30 of our company's most senior developers each saying from other parts of the world it's not working. And you just go, "Nope, I can ping it.
It's up. Sorry. It's responding."
Oh, man. One of our architects who heard this joined a call and was like, yeah, just the tone in his voice, you could just hear it. He was just kind of like, "Yeah, no, they said they could ping it, so everything must be fine." And it was just like, "Oh God."
And this is a person that doesn't like doing calls at all. He joined just to say that, and it was fantastic.
I got
to
share that one.
Yeah.
Okay, well, as you know, all our applications do is they really just ping each other. So I guess you're right. We'll turn the ping machines back on.
Yeah. Would you say authentication via ping?
Right. Yeah.
It's like Morse code. You send it. You convert every character into a ping, like submarines, like ding, ding, ding.
Beep, 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 beep.
And that's password 05. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yep, that was today.
And then we had another one.
We reminisced a little bit about another story.
There's just been some good excuses lately.
Good?
Yeah, my favorite one was one from last week where, again, there was like we had this very advanced team trying to come into our network saying, you know, your network is dropping us. And I think I could tell this story.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So we get involved with the call. Our network team goes, "Nope, everything looks fine." the first thing that comes through is they realize our network team's like tracing it, and every 15 minutes, this very advanced team sends a second request, like a sort of heartbeat, and that's when they get dropped. And our team goes, "Well, you're sending a second request." And he goes, "Well, it is a server. I mean, like, it should be able to handle two requests at a time."
They're a little balanced.
Like, I mean, it's almost like it's the world's most incompetent doctor or something. Well, there's a problem right there. I mean, you're trying to move both arms at the same time.
We might need some more RAM for this one.
Yeah.
So then the whole thing goes down. And he used a phraseology that I just love, because I think even somebody who's not technical could recognize it as bullshit. Like, we all know there's a major problem. We're trying to figure out what's going on. Like, we think it's you. No, it's not us. We think it's you. It's not us. And then we get an email. You know what? We did find this one machine that changed state. Which I think is the best explanation I've ever heard.
Well, that's better than, you know, the what we used to get, which was the nope, nope, not us, nope, yeah. Nope, not us, and then all of a sudden, try it again.
Hit refresh.
I love that, the unrelated, you know what, try it again, and then it all works. What was the problem? We didn't change anything.
We didn't do
anything. What are you talking about? I didn't touch anything.
We just had a hunch it would work.
Yep.
Yes.
We had an issue with something that, you know, wasn't a problem, and then magically got fixed, and it was literally just that kind of a message. Everything's fixed. Try it again, with no detail on what was going on. And, you know, a common courtesy dealing with other technical people that are kind of in the same department, you'd think that they might put a little bit more detail in the, oh, yeah, you know what, this router was sure, down. Yeah. There was that. There was that. No, just, you know what, it's fixed. Go on.
Solved itself. Yep. Solved itself, and then it told us it solved itself. So we relayed the message.
It was a hiccup. That's all right.
The state looks good now.
The state looks
we're set.
You're safe. You're not. Your server's not going to go liquid on us. It's going to stay solid.
It was solid.
It liquefied, but we were able to.
It was going liquid. Yeah. We stopped it before it got gaseous.
We're yeah, because gas you can't bring back. It's gone.
Solution, original state restored.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah. That was a good laugh this morning.
This is my world.
So very good support things this week. So what else is going on in the world? There's been a little travel. So, John, you were traveling last week, right?
I was. I was lucky enough to be in our New York office for a couple of days. Not sure that's a lot of fun, but then the end of the week I got to spend out west with friends. I got to increase my distinct check-ins on Untappd, but I was still called a loser by most of my friends because I am only at 650 while they're all over like 2,000 distinct check-ins.
And this Untappd, for those listeners who may not know what this is, it is a, what, a beer tracking?
Yeah, so it's almost like
it's almost like Foursquare for beers.
It's Foursquare
like
for beer,
you're
exactly.
Telling your beer, telling the world what beers
you get to
consumed.
Rate it,
right?
You get to say where you've had it. You post a picture of you enjoying it, and
I discovered the strategy. What we talked about today at lunch in our room. First of all, the guys don't have children.
Yeah, and we've realized why they have 4,000 check-ins, and
they don't have children. They live in the city. And they never order a full pint. They always, whenever there's an option for a flight, you always get the flight option.
Yeah.
So you're tasting like six beers right there.
Yeah.
These are Untappd professionals.
They are professionals.
John,
yes.
John, also he was sharing earlier, he went to what some people consider to be the greatest brewery in the world, and was cut off. Right.
Not me personally, but my friend that actually was the host of the weekend. The waitress comes over and goes, "Do you need another beer?" And he's like, "Yeah, I need another beer." And she's like, "You've ordered a lot, and we just had a management meeting about this, and we're not supposed to serve people." And my friend's 6'3", and he's a professional triathlete, and he's Canadian. So,
hey.
And so he's like, "Do I look like I'm inebriated?" And I'm walking home. So she basically brought him another beer.
Management's disgust people like you.
Exactly.
And we're not sure how to handle it.
Yes.
So
6'3", triathlete, Canadian.
Yes.
That's who they're talking about?
Yeah.
I like the transaction. Just go, "Do you need another beer?" Yes. Yeah, I was like 100% sure you were going to say no.
Thought you were going to say check. But
And he also looks like, I'm not sure if you guys ever seen the HGTV show The Property Brothers. The twin brothers that are actually Canadian, but he looks exactly like one. So we were actually telling people all weekend that this is one of the Property Brothers.
That's hilarious. People probably fell for it because that's
absolutely
the kind of celebrity you would say,
yes.
"Oh, yeah, sure, I could run into them, you know, at this kind of place."
Yes, yeah. So
they kind of look like Metro Lumberjacks.
Exactly.
Metro Lumberjack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gavin, is that what you're going for?
That's the look I'm going for.
So one other funny story from last weekend. I lost my ID last weekend. Lost my driver's license. So I took my passport.
Didn't hear this.
Yeah. So I took my passport with me, and we go to a Bevco, which is like a Binny's liquor store.
Yeah.
And in California, they have a sign that says, "We ID everyone under 50. So first of all, if you don't get ID'd, the person thinks you're like 55. So they think you're really old. That doesn't really bode well for you. But I got questioned about my passport. She started asking
me. So your passport was fake.
Yes.
Yeah.
So she's like asking me, "What year were you born? you know, what where do you live? And I was like, excuse me, I have, you know, stamps in there from China. If you want to, like, start going through my passport and questioning my stamps as well. But, you know, she let me buy a you know, 6-pack of beer.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
It was like, what? Who would choose a passport of all the things you could counterfeit
and fake? Yes.
Yeah, a passport would clearly be the hardest.
Yeah.
Gav, is that what you use for like 3 years to like buy beer and stuff?
A fake passport?
Yeah.
A fake passport or
no.
Oh.
Just a passport.
You're denying it now?
This is recording, right? I mean.
Do you know what else? You know what's funny? In Chicago, they used to keep your license if they pulled you over as bond.
Right.
Oh, really?
Yep.
And every liquor store was supposed to respect your parking, your speeding ticket as your ID.
Yeah,
sure. So I always thought, like, that's actually the easiest thing to forge because, like, that's true. Just paper with scribbles on it.
My friend
and you
that,
could
actually.
Go to a liquor store and you could just go, oh yeah, man, I got pulled over on Cicero. This is my ID. But yeah, I would go into bars. It happened to me once when I first moved here, and I would go into bars and show them the parking ticket.
The only other story
my friend turned a 1 into a 7 or something and did that for like 3 years.
Oh really?
Yeah,
that's interesting.
So they used to staple your ID to the ticket and then you'd get it back when you went to court.
Right.
And then if, let's say, you got pulled over again, the cop would ask for your license and he'd hold it and he'd be like, oh, I feel some staple holes in this one. Yeah. It looks like you've been here before. So I, trying to beat the system, tried to iron my ID. I ironed my driver's license. I put some wax paper around it, ironed it, melted it.
Nice.
But there were no holes. And I still used it. It just was deformed. And I was like, yeah, I went through the dryer.
You look like Jabba the Hutt. That's all right.
I went through the dryer. So what? You can't read my license number, my address, you know, anything like that. Whatever.
But to wrap up the story, I did have 38 distinct check-ins.
Distinct, wow. Untapped check-ins, yeah. Over one weekend for John.
Yeah.
I mean, that's impressive.
It was stellar.
Yeah. You were with the professionals.
You were with the professionals.
I was. Yes. Trying to be with the big dogs.
Yes. Yes.
Didn't work, though.
Pretty good.
Anyway.
So I have a semi-related story. I was out with my buddies, his friends, and they're all professional triathlon people, also from California. I think your friends are from California, right, John?
Yeah, Oregon, California.
Oh, okay. Anyways, it was just a funny story, or I thought it was funny. He just got engaged. He was here for his bachelor party, and he's like, tell him about how you proposed. And he did this whole elaborate romantic thing where, I don't know, his girlfriend really wanted to be surprised and was like, it's important to me that you surprise me. So he, like, had his buddy like fake call them while they were coming back from a race. She's also a triathlete, and say the highway was shut down. So he pretended he gets off at where he knows a B&B is going to be there, and they act like they just get a room spontaneously, and he proposes. Like, very nice. My buddy then goes, tell him your original plan. He goes like, the original plan I was told not to do, and you know, I listened to that advice. He's like, tell him the original plan. So she really stressed that she wanted to be surprised. He's like, well, she's so smart. All I'm gonna do, like, he's kind of like almost autistic. He like it just thinks about goals. He's like, okay, all right, easy. I roofie her. At the end of a race, I guess, like, you have a water. He's going to roofie her at the end of a race.
Yes.
Put her in the car. They show up in a different state, and he proposes.
Oh, my God.
Crossing state lines, that's now a federal offense.
Yeah.
So.
And we're like, dude, I think that's like you're going to start your marriage, assuming she would say yes after that. And he was like, yeah, well, she'll wake up. She'll be, like, all confused.
Who are you?
Major felony. Yeah. It'll be a great way to start this relationship. Yeah.
But I got pretty universally negative feedback on that plan.
Weigh the pros and cons.
And he's not like I make him like, it probably sounds like he's like some sort of sexual predator or something. He's just like, he's so literal that when she said surprise me, he's like, whoa, what's the great, what could be the biggest surprise in the world? Waking up in a different state.
Well, I asked her father's hand in marriage, yep. And then I told him the plan, and he said no. You may not have my daughter.
Another state.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Oh, that's funny.
Wow.
Bit of a miscalculation bringing that up with Dad.
Probably not a good bet.
No. No.
What else do we have for this week?
Well, I have some really good vendor scum.
Oh, let's hear
it. Oh, your vendor scum.
Yeah. So
I got the same one, by the way.
I started getting vendor scum emails from some of our listeners, which is great. And so I think with one of our listeners from New York, we're going to have a vendor persistence competition. And this is when what vendors do is they just keep on resending the same email and see how many times they build
reply,
a chain.
Reply,
and
hey,
they keep
John,
on.
Why didn't you respond to this?
Yeah, why didn't you respond to this? And so I have one that's up to like probably 12 or 13.
Ooh.
And our listener in New York has some just as high. So
all right.
I thought that was kind of going to be a fun competition, but let me pull up a couple emails here.
Go ahead, Darren. I'm intrigued about your Dell vendor scum.
Which was that?
You kind of posted some snail mail.
Yeah, so it's funny. I
how did that happen?
So I registered a domain, vendorscum.com, and next thing I know, I'm getting mail at home, probably like Sean did one time.
Yep.
And it's basically a Dell advertisement. You know, let us help you grow your business, vendorscum.com. And it's
addressed with vendor scum on it.
Yeah, vendor scum.
Oh my God, I don't even realize.
My wife is like, what is this all about? And I'm like, don't worry about it. It's something we do for work. It's okay.
If we're talking about domains that wives are concerned about, do we need to go to Sean Flannery for this?
Probably not.
Is this too soon?
Tell that story.
Are we too soon? Is 12 episodes in a little too soon to discuss domain registrations and wives?
It is funny. I mean, like, you really throw a monkey wrench in all their systems when you register a domain that their techs aren't even comfortable saying out loud. Which is what I did.
Yes, I mean, I think this is a great segue into Sean's story about the domain he registered.
All right, so I'll tell a quick version of this because it's a long story.
But, yes.
I was out drinking with a buddy who went through a divorce, and we were drinking for a long time, and he, you know, he had shared that he was so scared about having to date again because he married his high school sweetheart. He's like, I don't even know how to look cool to dudes. Like, I don't know how to make a dude even. Like I know I can't act cool with girls. I don't even know how to let guys know I'm dating women. Like, what term? He goes, what do you single guys? I was dating Jess, but I wasn't married at the time. He's like, what do you single guys call women? And before I could answer, he drunkenly goes, is it slammable dick caves? That was his word for slang for women. It was so unexpected that I immediately registered it. And we were
first thought, I gotta register that.
Yeah,
I somehow thought
I was so drunk, no, I thought it was gonna become a huge phrase. I remember being amazed it was available.
This was like .com boom era.
.com, yeah. Like, I can't believe.
Yeah, everybody's squatting on domains at the time.
I don't know how a businessman hasn't already.
You squatted on some savvy entrepreneurs.
So, anyways, I register it. Don't think anything of it. But we get a letter. Then three years later, I get married.
Congratulations.
I ended up, apparently when I drunkenly registered, I set it to auto renew in 3 years.
Oh, geez.
So Jess gets this bill.
Shortly after your
we came back from the honeymoon, like, she's opening up our joint mail for the first time, and she sees like $90 .. slammabledickcaves.com.
What are you into?
Yeah, she goes like, what the hell are you into? I remember telling her, I'm not into it, I own it.
CEO, co-founder.
No response but possible.
So there's two funny things about that. So she's like, all right, you can't be wasting money on these dumb, drunk ideas of yours. So I then set it to not auto. I own it for 3 more years, but I set it to not auto renew itself. Two funny fallouts of that. One, I had a job interview when I first moved to Chicago. Or no, excuse me. After the .com I worked at closed that. I was interviewing at a bank, and they must have done a background check, and one of their questions was, are you a pornographer? And I was like, what? And then I hit it. I go, wait a minute. Is this about slammable dick caves?
Oh, God.
And they did say it was about that.
Yes. But then we are concerned about the caves.
Go Daddy.
And the slammability.
So then it's finally gonna, I don't own it anymore, it's finally gonna expire, and you start getting this mail, you know? And the mail says, like, we want to help you get slammable dick caves up to the next, but the funniest part is when the techs have to call. So GoDaddy has, like, their sales staff call you. But they don't, it's just in their queue, they mustn't look at it yet.
Yeah,
so he's like,
no.
Mr. Flattery, oh, thank God I reached you, you know, I'm here to save you an important business error today. And I'm like, what? You know, and it calls from Arizona, I think they're out of Arizona or something.
Yeah, they are.
And he's like, yeah, your domain's about to expire. And I, at the time, I probably owned like 5 or 7 domains,
sure.
Most of which were for like valid things. This is the one straight up joke I have. And I go, what domain? He goes, well, I got to look it up right for you right now. He goes, oh.
Oh.
He starts with, it's the slammable one.
The slammable one.
Just to fuck with him, I go, I own a few of those. Which one?
Yeah, which slammable one are you talking about? They're all slammable.
Yeah. Did you force him to say it?
Yeah, so he said it, and I'm like, you know what, I'm going to let it expire. But
yeah. Sorry I had to make you work there, but yeah, we're good, thanks.
Oh, that's funny. All right, I have two to share. These are pretty funny emails. I got one.
Back to Vendor Scum.
Vendor Scum. From the IT Daily Advisor, 10 hurricane tips for IT.
What?
Mm.
According to the National Hurricane Center, the Atlantic and Eastern Pacific hurricane season doesn't end until November 30th, so we're not out of the woods yet.
Oh, no.
We have 10 tips for every IT department that's looking to minimize the risk to hurricanes.
Okay.
So that's a good one. And this is a good one for the...
We've directly been impacted by a hurricane before, so that's...
Which is kind of scary.
It is sort of funny. Yeah, we moved our data centers to, you know, kind of like the Northeast, more or less. And then with global warming and everything, like, they're getting, like, they're Category 3 hurricanes.
We didn't see global warming happening, so we moved everything to the East Coast, right on the shores, you know, of
what could
Jersey,
ever happen in New York?
And, you know, a hurricane hit. And, right. You know, we just weren't prepared for that.
Single point of failure.
We have to move it. Like, it's going to be like nuclear waste or something where we have to move it to like level Area 51 or something.
I don't know if it's better or worse. We were looking at data centers in Miami for a while. It's like
we were.
Miami would be worse, right? You know?
Thankfully, we didn't go there.
Have they built submergible data centers yet? Because Miami will be underwater in like 10 years.
I believe one of their selling points was, we're kind of on the highest point in Miami, so don't worry about it. It's going to be fine.
the highest point of New Orleans.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. Okay. Our employees will be dead.
Unless it's,
but your dad will be
unless
okay.
Unless it's floating. I don't really, yeah.
Okay. What's the other one? This is my favorite for the week. the title is The Force of Flash.
I love this one. I got this one, too. This is my favorite.
This is good. The Force is strong with you. I can sense it. I can sense the IMAX tickets to the Star Wars premiere on December 18th would be desirable. But a catch there is.
But a catch there is.
Like
Yoda.
Yes. Just wait. He goes into Yoda speak.
He goes into Yoda.
Vendor Scum.
It's all in Yoda. Oh,
this is great.
Take an introductory meeting with the Pure Storage team and IMAX tickets to the premiere you shall receive.
Tickets to the premiere you shall receive.
Yoda says, fear of complicated storage leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. But accepting a meeting with Pure leads to Star Wars premiere tickets.
Oh, God.
Wait. And with the caveat of...
You have to meet with them.
Yeah.
No. And while supplies last or whatever.
Oh, yeah. We only have 2 tickets, so you guys better hurry up.
Oh, shit. That sold out like a month and a half ago. But, you know, just please call us.
So, yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
We're going to have to make you do that again in the Yoda voice, though. I bet
Aaron on our team could probably do a good Yoda voice.
He could. but those I got that good. One and I couldn't believe it. And then you sent it out and Rich replied.
Yeah, Rich was like,
oh my God, this is hilarious.
Oh gosh.
I wish there was a way to like sign these guys up for each other so they all get each other's spam. I don't know if we can do that.
Oh God, have you ever heard that crank call where operators just keep calling each other?
Exactly like that. Yeah, that'd be great.
It's like so there's some way to like you call an operator for assistance, but that operator calls another operator hops on the line, and they just keep asking each other, like, can I help you? No, can I help you? Can I help you? And there's, like, five operators who have no idea that they've been patched together asking each other, can I help you? No, can I help you? I think somebody's pranking us. No, but can I help you? What do you need? Who are you trying to talk? And they're each getting more upset that nobody's can I help you? I want to help you. No, you want to help me, but I want to help you. And it's just this five-way, like, circle jerk, and they're just getting madder and madder and madder. And finally somebody's like, I think somebody pranked us. And they just start hanging up. Click, 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 click. That's what vendor scum email spamming would be like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny.
What you need to do is just forward that to another vendor scum and vice versa and let them two hash it out, but BCC yourself on it.
Just get them bouncing to each other. Yeah. That's absolutely what you gotta do.
How do they get your guys' email? Is it from LinkedIn or how do they get it? Like, how do they...
I think our parent company has sold us out. Probably. And they have all of our emails that they're making millions of dollars off of by sending them to...
I don't know. I finally took the advice of our cohort. I have now got a whitelist.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
you went
really?
That route?
I went that route, and it's amazing. And so all I do is, like, once a day or maybe twice a day, I look at where all the mail is filed. So everything coming into my inbox gets filed into this folder, unless it's at one of these whitelisted domains. So obviously I've whitelisted all of our company's domains and everybody that I end up working with.
We have 130 domains registered at JWT. Did you take the time to do that?
No.
I'm just making sure.
We gotta be.
Okay.
We have to.
So the whitelist is what it is, but the stuff that gets filed, it doesn't get trashed immediately. It just gets filed into a folder. And twice a day I look at it and I go, oh, there's a domain I missed. I should add that one back. That one should be added back. So some people who I don't interact with all the time wait a little longer to get a reply, but it's brilliant. I'm down to a manageable inbox again.
That explains why I don't get responses from Steve.
Yeah.
All right. Well, all of you, yeah, you're all blacklisted.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. I recommend it.
All right.
I did have just sort of 2 seconds worth of a couple of weeks ago. I went to a conference, the Atlassian conference, which is they make tools for helping us collaborate and build software. And it was a cool event. It was in a horrible hotel. It was in a horrible venue, but the event itself is fun. It's an interesting company. These guys, I think they came up with a brilliant plan. So they were on the verge of their IPO. And literally, they announced, I think, the day after the event, their IPO was announced. But being very, very busy, the two founders of the company came on the first day. And, you know, when you go to these events, generally, it's a bit of a song and dance, right? They're trying to entertain as much as they are trying to share what they're doing and how they're doing it and why we should all continue to invest in their companies. But they have people that they'll have a DJ or they'll have, you know, the Microsoft conference had a rapper do a thing. The Adobe conference had, you know, a bunch of people, celebrities doing things. So we sit down and we're waiting for the event to start, and out walks to a beat Daft Punk. Oh, and wow. They walk out.
The real, you know, Daft Punk or just... Or you, well, I guess with Daft Punk, you have no idea, right?
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the guys come out and they do a whole song, choreographed thing, mixing things together, having a good time. And then when it finishes, they take off their helmets and it's the two founders of the company. So clearly, no, it's not Daft Punk, but they were representing themselves that way. And what was brilliant about it, because they were so busy with the IPO, they looked just awful. They looked so exhausted, these two guys, when they took their helmets off. But they did their presentations that morning, that first day. And then you saw them everywhere, not because you saw them, but because Daft Punk would just show up at different parts of this conference, right? So they'd be walking down the hall and you'd be going, hey, those are the owners. No, they're not the owners. They're just two guys that wore the uniform. So it looked like they were virtually all over this conference, but I'm pretty damn sure they were only there for their portion of the presentation. I thought it was a great point. That's very interesting.
Like kind of a famous exchange between of Penn and Teller, who's the guy that talks? I don't know which. Is it Penn?
Penn.
Yeah.
So there was a, like when Blue Man started, I think they started out of San Francisco. I think they were like this art house theater in San Fran when they initially began, and then the Intel commercials kind of made them huge. But anyways, I guess Penn met with them before they ever got big. And he was like, you guys are going to be enormous. He goes, do you know what you figured out that none of us ever thought of? How to make yourself anonymous. So you can do this show. And he's like, Teller and I can only be in one city a day.
That's right.
He's like, you guys can do this everywhere. You for like that power of anonymity.
Yeah.
If you can still be branded and anonymous at the same time, you know, it's very, you know, there's a lot of leverage in that, but there's very few, you know, Daft Punk is like that.
Yep. Yep. Well, I thought they found a way to participate in their entire event without, you know, make everybody feel like they were participating in the entire event, but without really killing themselves any more than they already were. Like I say, I mean, they just, I felt really bad for them when they took off their helmets and you saw these gaunt faces and dark circles under their heads, like, holy crap. And you know that they, you know, tried to look their best for this event, right? It's like, whew. Touch up that makeup, dude.
Yikes.
It wasn't good. But they got their big announcement off the plate. So hopefully that's a good thing. But then I also heard that their CFO, I don't know, John, maybe you know something about this, but their CFO, they had to, I don't know if he stepped down or they let him go or what, but there were apparently some accounting issues at his last job, which was another IPO. So this whole thing happened and they're like, oh, maybe he should be out of here now.
Is this because I work with the Atlassian project here at our company, or because I've brought down a few other companies in the past?
Whatever, you know, works for you, John.
Okay.
Because you're dirty.
Yeah. Okay. Whatever. I see how it is.
No.
You've also been known to launder money for your condo association as well.
Yes.
Maybe we shouldn't talk too much about that.
Known iPad thief.
Yeah. All right. Great.
So anybody have anything else? Dion, you brought up that Betamax was dying.
Oh, that's right. They finally did. Isn't that – it's always weird when they announce that a product's discontinued, because it's like 30 years later than you thought it was.
I just didn't understand who in Asia Pacific was still using Betamax, in that Sony needed to continue to make it for them. Like, what industry what was using it that they kept it around, literally single-handedly kept the entire format around since the 80s?
Well, didn't like all the cinema files I've ever met always claimed that Betamax is supposed to be head and shoulders better than
it was
VHS.
The superior tape format. But because some major, to be honest, porn studio VHS, that's what survived.
Oh,
that's
you know, that's interesting. You know, I think I read a similar article where they said that a lot of the entertainment standards have actually been set by the porn industry.
I mean, we've heard that over the years, but this is the first instance where what tape format was going to benefit the most, from a major studio. The problem was it wasn't a major studio; it was a major porn studio. So obviously,
back in the day, that was probably the only kind of tape you'd buy. Because remember, like when I remember when VHS tapes first came out, it was super expensive to own them. You know, and I think the only kind of tape you would buy would probably be porn.
Well, so the weird thing about tape, if we want to go back to weird industry standards. So besides Beta, VHS, and only when I joined the advertising world did I learn about 3/4-inch tape. And 3/4-inch tape was this professional standard where it was wider tape, longer tape, and it was sent between like television studios and whatnot. And in our old studio here at our agency, we had 3/4-inch tapes all over the place. Nothing but it. That's how we recorded our audio, how we recorded our video. And I was like, what is this strange professional standard tape that we had? And
also a Sony product, by the way.
It was a Sony product, right? So, you know, just this whole Betamax dying in the year 2015 just made me think, like, over the years of tape that's lasted for video, Beta, in a region where millions of people are still using it, that was the one that lasted till 2015. We're not using 3/4-inch tape to send over our commercials anymore. We're not sending those to broadcast studios. We're not using VHS really anymore for anything. That's dead. But Betamax was still alive in our world until this year. So I was like, if that really was the best standard for video on tape, how screwed did Betamax get? And why, you know, it was just like, anyways, but it really made me think, like, what, you know.
All right, I want you to find the porn reason somewhere, because I'm not seeing it. I'm taking a quick look here, and it appears as though the primary driver were certain decisions that Sony made to limit the recording time. And consumers, you know, had a perceived value to longer than an hour recording time. And VHS, you know, went up to 3 hours pretty quickly, and Beta lost as a result. Yes, it was higher quality, both audio and video, more stable, all of that stuff. But Sony made the decision in 1975 to limit their Betamax recording time to 1 hour for television systems.
Is this Asia Pacific keeping it alive?
Yeah.
Okay. And that was, according to, you know, the master of all, Wikipedia, that was kind of the driver for the dwindling of the Beta format. And sure, there were niche players or niche markets where it was still being used. But for the most part, VHS won the war, and it was just the long game, just like U-Matic, just like the 3/4-inch tape you're talking about. It took forever for our company to finally give up on that stuff. Sony had stopped building the bloody players. We couldn't get them anymore, and our business was still reliant on it. And we were like, you know, they were gold. If you have one of these things, you had to, like, keep it alive.
Well, we're still keeping Domino servers alive for Asia Pacific. So
during
something about
the move,
they just can't let go.
In 2005, during our move, when we had these devices that were available, there were certain things that were eBayable for enough money, things that were not. And I, you know, me being, again, 3/4-inch until I came into this industry, had no idea. But once trying to, you know, you try to support those things, forget about it. Like, you're not finding parts, you're not finding, you know, devices, you're not finding anything. So those things, like Steve said, they were gold, man. If you had one that worked and was able to record and play and send to a broadcast studio, you were like, that was awesome. So anyways, during our move, you know, we had a bunch of these things, and I'm not really a pack rat, but I'm kind of like, if these are like some of the last of these on Earth, should we not like move a few just to have? And it was like, yeah, sure, throw them in a box. So we threw a couple in a box and we moved them. They never were used in our new space, in our new office. But I moved them just so that we could say, in case we ever got one of those, we didn't have to pay thousands just to play or record something from that tape format. But, you know, at the end of the day, we didn't need them. But it was just, it was a weird story for me to hear that in 2015, a technology that I thought had been killed in the 80s was just finally actually being killed now. It's you know, it didn't shock and surprise me, but it was just kind of like,
it
oh,
is kind of shocking
really?
That it lasted that long.
Really? There was an industry that actually valued the fact that it was the best format for tape and used it, and Sony is finally stopping making it or distributing it or whatever, and I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Just very interesting for me.
Imagine being like the guy at Sony that's in charge of the Betamax division.
He was probably like also responsible for security of their passwords for movie that's studios. He was probably also responsible for the encryption of their PlayStation passwords. It's probably the same guy who, you know.
Sony's had, yeah.
Sony's had their
hack. The rootkits.
Oh, my God.
I mean, yeah. They had like probably three of the biggest security scandals in corporate history.
Oh yeah,
I think only like maybe Target's is bigger than theirs. I don't know, maybe there's a couple.
But then the reason why I bring this up is, and I don't really want to go too far into it, but the fact that you know some people say terrorists are using PlayStation 4, Sony PlayStation 4s to communicate over because the encryption and the security level on PlayStation 4 is so high that you can't crack into it that they use it. So the governments can't listen to them. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like,
Sony?
Wasn't the passwords and the entire network brought down some like a Christmas or two ago because, you know, everybody got a PlayStation 4 and then they couldn't play it on Christmas because they were hacked. And then a year later, the Sony movie studios were hacked and the entire...
Exactly.
Like,
and Sony, like, who lost like millions to that hack, I'm sure if NSA... And I wouldn't be surprised if this has happened with the Sony going, hey, we would like a backdoor. I guarantee sure. Sony would give it to them.
But,
it's a battle against encryption that's going on right now.
Well, there definitely is, yeah.
I just found it very...
And I don't think a terrorist would trust Sony's place.
No.
I'll be like, oh, hey, let's all get on Star Wars Battlefront and we'll...
Hey, that game's coming out. And I'm excited for it. I don't expect to like plan, you know, terrorist interventions or anything, but you know, leave Battlefront alone.
Dion did get the version of Battlefront with the Han Solo
in carbonite mini fridge
that holds 6 beers.
Nice. Awesome. Did you really?
I swear to God, yeah. So the Walmart exclusive for Battlefront is you spend essentially twice the amount for the game, which is crazy. But you get a little mini refrigerator with Han Solo and carbonite on the cover on like the door, and you can put 6 cans of, you know, beer, dew, whatever you want to put in there, and it comes with the game. And I thought, you know, that's the coolest package ever. Like
Hans cold.
It keeps Hans
your beer's cold.
Beer's cold. Exactly.
Hey.
Yeah. So that's
John. Thank you very much, Sean. Because you're so loud, I haven't given you a hard time about this, but I do believe your microphone has been backwards the entire time.
No, I'm looking at the emblem right there. Right.
You sound a little off. That's all I'm saying.
Well, that's going to make me sound worse.
Oh, I am backwards. I didn't realize the emblem on the bottom is on both sides. Yeah. All right. You got to actually take this off to see. We should mark these on the bottom so we don't have to take it off.
Everybody but you understands how these mics work.
No, but you have to take the spit guard off to see, right?
Well, Gavin took your spot too, by the way. Let's just mention that.
Yeah, if everybody just stays where they're supposed to be.
We have assigned seating in this room.
No. It's fine. It's fine. Sean is watching, so I didn't want to, you know, make a big deal out of it, but just don't fucking do it.
But that was backwards regardless of, you know.
Yeah,
I'm sure it still picked me up.
So we do have new, in our little speakeasy where we broadcast from, we're starting to decorate based on the breweries that we visit and beers that we enjoy. And we do have a new addition thanks to John and his little trip to the Red River Valley.
So. Yes, one of the best double IPAs probably on the market.
Yeah.
Pliny the Elder.
Well, don't some people think it is the best beer in America? That it's supposed to be super hard to find, right?
Yeah.
Well, at least outside of the brewery itself.
Outside the brewery is probably hard to find. So it's called Pliny the Elder. And
if anybody wants to share this with them so that we get sponsorship, that'd be great. But we do consider it the best beer on the planet.
We'll be huge in Santa Rosa.
Yep, we'll be huge in Santa Rosa, just like we're huge in New Zealand. This will be great.
So when you order a small one, they make fun of you and ridicule you. And they're like, oh, here's your tiny Pliny.
Tiny Pliny.
Tiny Pliny.
Oh, that's so yes. cute. It's adorable. Did you order one of those, John?
No, I went big.
Oh, of course you did.
So
you had to check it in, so you went
had
big.
To check it in.
Yep.
Sean's throwing stuff around in the room. Holy crap, what's going on?
Well, I'm looking up this beer. It has 100. It's the only beer I've ever seen that has 100% rating at Beer Advocate. Other than what's that other one? Hopheady or something? That's like Pliny the Elder and Hopheady are usually considered like the two best beers by Beer Advocate.
Wow, where does that? What's the one with three Floyds that comes out?
Dark Lord,
the BCS.
Dark Lord.
Oh, the Dark Lord.
Dark Lord.
Oh, yeah. Once a year, but
yeah.
Where does that land on?
I don't know. I think isn't that like radically different every year though? I thought.
No, they keep it pretty much the same.
Oh, they do. Okay.
Yeah.
Has anybody ever had it?
I've never had it. Don't you have to go to the festival to get it?
I've had it.
Yeah.
I've had it.
Have you gone to the...
No, I had friends that did go, so I was lucky enough to taste theirs.
Kind of insane, but cool. Well, we should probably wrap up soon here.
What's on the agenda for tonight? A certain person farewell tour, is it still going on?
I asked if there was a chance that I could have dinner with a certain person. So
okay.
I am intending to have dinner, and I don't know if it will be a group or if it will be just the two of us, but we'll figure that out.
Got it.
Dark Lord is 95%, so it's very high as well.
Yeah, but not quite.
Not quite 100.
Cool. Well, anybody else have anything, or shall we wrap?
That's all I had.
Cool. Well, thanks very much, everyone, for listening again. We are the Worldwide IT Guys, and you can check us on www.itguys.com or on the iTunes store. Just look us up, Worldwide IT Guys. Thanks for listening. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
See you.
Say goodbye, Deanne.
Goodbye, everybody.
This is the one I've had, which is also 100% beer, rated beer. Heady Topper, which is by The Alchemist out of Vermont. This is the one that actually gets sold on the black market. It's because he only brews it. It's like a one-dude operation in Vermont.
Oh, wow.
And it's supposed to be like you have to drive there to get it, but it's supposed to be like the – I did have one of these. A fan of the Blackout Diaries brought it to our last show at the Lincoln Lodge, and it was amazing.